Many of us spend a lot of time each day on the computer, both at home and at work, and because of that, having the right computer for your needs can make your time more efficient and enjoyable, certainly. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network on this wonderful early fall Tuesday. Peter Green is an independent computer consultant. He provides great information and resources at Infostar.com, and he comes by once a month to talk with us about technology and personal computers. And Peter, great to see you as always.
Always great, Larry. Always great to be here.
I want to talk about replacing computers with you for a little bit. What are some indications that you may need to replace your current computer?
Well, if you're getting lots of error messages, you definitely need to explore those and the meaning of them. And they used to be real cryptic. They're cryptic, but if you do a search on the internet, usually it leads you in a direction of, you know, what the cause is and what potential solutions are out there for you to try, or maybe talk to your technician to, you know, help you through things. When you find that your computer is, you've exhausted the hard drive space, you're not doing file management, and you're not paying attention to that, and that creeps along, and all of a sudden you start having operating system problems, that means either you're going to have to do some file management and get rid of some files or back them off of your system, or you're going to have to get a larger hard drive. And, you know, drives keep on increasing in size, but the applications that we use to create storage files, such as videos and music, pictures. I mean, I saw an advertisement for a smartphone that had a 41 megapixel camera, and I was like, "You've got to be kidding me!"
Yeah, you know, amazing.
That is crazily, you know, large.
Yeah.
Because the larger or the higher the pixel number, the greater the density of the file, the larger the file size. So just taking simple pictures all of a sudden from your smartphone and transferring them over to your desktop can become an issue if you're not aware of that. Because it's just not a simple picture anymore. It's it's something that's taking up a lot of storage. So, you know, looking at things like that, if you, you know, are a gamer, it's always an issue pressing the performance of your machine and keeping up. And as they do upgrades to your games, you find out rudely that your system is lagging behind, which means that you have to do an upgrade. And whether or not that upgrade is a video card or more memory, you have to explore, you know, what is the expansion capabilities of your system. So when you start getting confronted with things like that in business applications, same thing with accounting systems and multi-user systems, when you keep on moving up the ladder in terms of software upgrades and it presses the envelope on your hardware, you know, those are times when you have to think about, do I keep upgrading my computer or do I choose a new system?
Yeah.
And then you have to look at what do you do in other parts of your life in terms of where the smartphones have led us down this path of using it for GPS, taking pictures. You know, people don't even carry cameras with them anymore. They're using their smartphones that have, you know, 5, 8 or higher megapixel, you know, picture taking capability and video as well, for messaging, for using applications like Skype when you travel abroad, to make inexpensive phone calls back to the U.S., using it like a level for hanging a picture, you know, looking at medical prescriptions, you know, drug prescriptions. You know, there's just thousands and thousands of apps out there for these smart devices. And then, then allows you to do email, note-taking. You know, there's an endless list. So all of a sudden you look at the smartphone and say, well, how much am I really using my smartphone, or would I look at using it that way? Because I didn't realize it could do all those things. You're listening to us now on the air, and we're talking and saying all these things it can do. So then you look at these smartphones and go, how much do I really need in my desktop for my everyday needs? And unless you're doing, you know, bookkeeping, video editing, you know, music and things like that, you might want to downplay how much you invest in a desktop or a laptop and look at a smart phone or smart device that not only makes calls, but is like a mini tablet. Because, you know, that's what's going on. Companies like Samsung, I'm sure the next iPhone is going to be larger because they're feeling the pressure from Samsung and Motorola making these smartphones larger with higher resolution to allow you to enjoy your experience so that when you're traveling, you, you know, look at videos. You know, if you're trying to learn things, you go on YouTube and, you know, do a search. You play your videos to teach you how to. You know, the list is endless.
It's amazing. And, you know, buying more computer than you need, it's I'm sure there's, in some ways you say, okay, well, if I buy one a little higher up than what I really need, that's going to help me, stay longer in with this one computer. Is that a way to look at it or not?
I don't think so. I think it's, you know, you look at your needs, goals, and objectives. What are you using the computer for? You find the right software that helps you do those things, and then you match the hardware to it. So you look at the specifications for the software that you're going to be using, and then, you know, look for the hardware that fits your needs the best. So that doesn't mean you have to break the bank.
Yep. The smartphones have really revolutionized so much of what we do. I was talking with somebody, a photographer, who said the companies that make cameras are all getting out of the low-end cameras.
Wasn't it Eastman Kodak?
They're getting out of the low-end cameras because everybody's using smartphones. So they're concentrating more on the high-end cameras for those who...
It's interesting. Polaroid is one of their specialties are like sports cam, you know, putting on a helmet, you know, putting a camera, video camera on a helmet. And they're pretty inexpensive. From what I recall, I think you can get some pretty neat kits for somewhere plus or minus $100.
That's amazing.
For putting a sports cam on your helmet. And so if you're a go-kart racer or, you know, a skydiver or just walking around and taking pictures of the crowd.
Peter Green, computer consultant with InfoStar.com, talking with us today about your personal computer. We're going to go to Paul in Milwaukee next, but... there's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comment. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And let's turn to Paul in Milwaukee. Paul, thank you for calling.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Well, it's definitely time for a new computer. I've had my current desktop 7 years, and I'm looking at, I don't want a laptop, either an all-in-one or another desktop, but I like how smooth, you know, how small and compact all-in-one is, but I've heard some criticisms of them. What is your opinion on the all-in-ones versus a traditional desktop?
Well, an all-in-one where you're talking about, like, the monitor and all the components are all there in one unit. It's kind of a I used to look at it when they started putting all the things on the system board, and if something failed, then you could kind of turn off that component of the system board and add a card to it. But that option doesn't really exist in an all-in-one because they're working on making things compact. Sort of like one step short of that would be Apple's, what is it, their little mini, where all you do is plug in a monitor to it, and it comes with a keyboard and a mouse. So they keep on making things smaller and smaller and more powerful. So, you know, there's no reason to think that the all-in-one is going to be, would be an appliance that's going to fail on a regular basis. In fact, I'm sure that they don't want to be taking these things back, so the reliability is probably very high on them. The key thing to keep in mind is there's probably going to be a minimal amount of upgrading that you can do. So just make sure that based on what you use your computer for, that the all-in-one has, you know, has what you want as far as capacity, you know, storage. You can always plug in, you know, an extra drive through a USB or FireWire port for backups or main storage, but as far as expandability, it probably won't be too many options for you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. I got an email from Lori in Milwaukee. She says, I'm looking to buy a new computer for basic word processing. internet browsing and photo editing. My main concern is that it's got to be powerful enough so that Adobe Photoshop elements don't freeze and crash frequently. So wondering what you're going to suggest there.
Well, I could tell you from being a user of a Windows system and a Mac system, looking at the Apple Mini would probably work just fine as far as, you know, meeting the requirements for Photoshop. If you're married to the Windows operating system, I would be probably looking at a desktop that would have at least 4 or higher gigs of RAM, and you know, the current operating system, Windows 8. You can always make it look like Windows 7. We've talked about that before, and yep. I leave the link up there on my top 10. So for doing word processing, web browsing, and editing photos, either direction, either way is going to work just fine. And I would have to say that in the world of editing, photos and videos and music, the applications on Apple work better than they do in the Windows environment.
Yep. Yep.
They're more stable.
Yep.
They're faster. And the Apple Mini, I don't know what the current price is on it, but it's got to be in the $500 price yep. range. So you're basically looking at what size monitor do you want to add. And I know online suppliers, I've seen 24-inch monitors for like $129 on yeah. sale, which is great.
So you got a pretty good system for pretty cheap.
Yeah. Or you can buy, the TVs that yeah. also double as PC monitors.
Dave in Appleton. Hello.
Hi. Great, I got on. I've been had my computer set to do automatic backups every Sunday at midnight for years. And in the last few months, it's telling me it's not successful backup. And the message I'm getting is failed while trying to read from the shadow copy of one of the volumes being backed up. Check event logs.
So you check the event logs?
Well, I don't. Yeah, I looked at them, but it doesn't. It doesn't tell me that what to do. I mean, I did some searching, and it said to try to disable your firewall and disable your virus thing. So I tried that, and it still didn't help. So I don't know.
Now, are you doing the backup locally to an attached drive, or are you doing it to like a cloud service where it's being transferred?
It's attached. It's an external hard drive.
Okay. What I would so you're trying to do like a total backup, or are you trying to do one that's that appends anything that's been changed?
Well, I'm not sure what it's doing.
Okay.
It was working, but
right.
I assumed it was just doing new stuff.
Right. Have you tried resetting the backup, like deleting it and then redoing it again? Because typically what I do when an application fails and it's something that you set up to do on a routine basis, what I'll do is after looking at the event logs and seeing if the codes give me any kind of clues as to where the problem lies. Maybe it's having a problem with a particular file where it can't read the drives when it hits that file, or maybe it's in a network environment and happens to be open or shared, and for whatever reason it errors out or blips on that. So I try to analyze what the message is telling me. And then the other thing is to just simply delete the scheduled event and exit the software, and playing it safe would be to reboot the computer. So now the settings have been saved in that software that it's not going to do the backup, and then go back in and reset it and tell it to do it again. And then the other thing I would recommend doing is maybe just do something simple so that you actually time it maybe like within 5 minutes of you doing the setup, and maybe just select a folder with a small number of files in it and just observe what it actually does. Watch the screen and see how your system reacts to it and see if it's actually doing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can copy to it if I pick a file or something and you know, go to that drive and it'll work.
Right, but that's different than actually, you know, witnessing how the software reacts to what you're telling it to do. And that's why I'm saying maybe pick 5 minutes out after you've done it and just sit there and, you know, wait until it's supposed to pop up and start backing up. Because it will, if it's unattended, it's the application still launches. And you'll be able to, I'm assuming you're using some kind of version of Windows?
Yeah.
So you can always do Control-Alt-Delete and look at the task manager and then see what, you know, you'll be able to click on the processes or applications that are running, and you should be able to see it.
Right.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest, I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You may have a question about your current computer, or you may have a question about getting a new one. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you as we visit today with Peter Green of InfoStar.com. Richard in Middleton up next. Hi, Richard.
Hello. How are you?
Hi.
Great. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I actually just had a comment and a suggestion for those who are calling looking for sort of a budget option for a basic computer. I never hear much talk about the Linux operating system on the show, but I switched to it, maybe 10 years ago, and I see absolutely no reason to have any other kind of computer. There's a million varieties of it, but something like Ubuntu Linux is, you know, just as easy for anybody with a basic knowledge of computer as Mac or PC, and I just wanted to throw that suggestion out.
Yeah. What do you think, Pete?
Well, we've talked about it on the show numerous times over the years, and like you mentioned, there are endless variations of Linux out there. Ubuntu is one that's been popularized by Dell. They've made a push to put that out there. My biggest recommendation is related to someone that would be looking at it as a solution is to perhaps look at initially some, you know, user group support or do some research, you know, seeing what's available for it, and, you know, maybe talking to some other Linux operating system users. They usually love them.
Yeah.
And I've used quite a variety of them. In fact, their main root is from AT&T's Unix, and AT&T back in the 80s came out with a Unix PC, and I went to a Unix expo, and there were so many variations of the operating system back then, and then another company made it popular was Santa Cruz, or it was called SCO Xenix, but it works well. And you can basically re-personalize your PC if you want to, as long as you have all the drivers for the devices that you're using in your system, you could rechristen it a Unix variation.
Yeah.
You know, whichever one you decide to pick. And a lot of times you can buy books that include a disk that have the operating system on them.
So there you go.
Yeah, the price is the best selling point. It's free and open source.
Yeah.
That is correct.
That's a very good price.
Yes.
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate the call. And Tim and Oakham, thank you for calling. Hi. I'm sorry, Tom.
Oh, hi. Hi. Gentlemen. I've been having a serious problem with not responding on my Windows 7 laptop here on the desk. It does it on just Explorer, and it does it on Internet Explorer.
Okay. Any other problems with any other programs that you try using?
The automatic backup that I set using the Windows, backup and restore.
Okay.
Under the maintenance tag, that's quit working.
Okay. How old is the system?
It's 3 years old, but I'm a fairly hard user.
Okay. Do you do any file maintenance, any, you know, disk maintenance in terms of, you know, getting rid of temporary files and things like that?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. One of the things you might want to look up online to try and do, if you have your Windows 7 disk, is to do a Windows 7 repair. And there are instructions online how to do that. Have you tried that at all?
Well, I didn't get a Windows 7 disk. I didn't think you got those anymore.
Well, you
I've gotten one of those for a long time.
Well, they should be.
I bought the computer.
Yeah. When you bought your computer, did you get any CD or DVDs with it, with the operating system on it?
No.
Okay.
One has three partitions on it, one primary for whatever you want to use it for. Then there's I think it's called a pre-OS partition, and then another small partition for something or other. I don't know what, but it seems like this particular computer, which is an Acer Aspire, has its operating system also on another small partition.
Okay. Well, what I would recommend doing is you can probably talk to Acer Tech Support, and they could, you know, you could either go online and do some research with the model of the computer that you have, and it will have instructions about how to create an operating system disk for you to use that would allow you to do system repair. And what the system repair does is it actually compares the operating system files with what they should be versus how they may have somehow been corrupted, which might be causing your problem. So that's one thing to attempt to do, because it sounds like it's not just happening with one program, but it's happening with different parts of the operating system on your computer. The other thing is it could be an indication that there's a component that's failing. So the system repair may or may not work because of a flaky, you know, hardware component, but it will tell you, it will give you reports when it's done doing the system repair if it found anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the instructions are online. Like I said, you can search for, with your Acer system, you know, how to create a Windows 7 CD or DVD, and then also, how to do a Windows 7 system repair.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Tom. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Question about your computer or your software? Give us a call as we visit with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And Jim in McQuantico has been waiting a bit, so let's go to Jim. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Hi. I am calling about a computer that I have, a desktop computer that is about 4 years old. It's really run quite well. It's the primary computer that my kids play on, and we do academic games and things like that. About a year ago, I did a software upgrade, bought the next Microsoft package with Excel and Word and those sorts of things, and it was working fine. Until about 2 months ago, at which time I went to open a document, and it said that my Microsoft packages or software was not an authentic product. And so I'm like, okay, well, I really need this document off the computer, so I'll just take it off using a flash drive and move it to one of my other computers and open it up. Well, my USB ports aren't working now, and so I have all this pictures and games and documents on my computer, but I can't open them, and I can't get on the internet using this computer, and I can't use my flash drives, and I don't know what happened to this computer that seemed to be very dependable for the longest time.
So you don't have any access to any of the USB ports, and...
Well, the mouse port in the back works, and the keyboard port works.
Okay.
But the other ports that I would put a flash drive into to take documents off, it doesn't even recognize that there's anything in the port.
Now, have you tried different flash drives? Not just one?
I have.
Okay.
Yeah, I have. But it won't connect to the internet anymore, and it is indicating that my Microsoft products are no longer or are not authentic.
It's using Windows 7?
No, it's using it's not a Windows. It doesn't have Windows 8, but I think it has the most current, like Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel. When we upgraded the software, we bought it and downloaded it from Microsoft directly.
But as far as the version of the operating system you're using?
Yes, it's Windows 7.
Okay. Have you tried doing a system restore at all?
I haven't because I'm worried about losing the data that I have on the computer. So I always get a little scared about it.
Yeah, doing a system restore actually has no effect on the data. So it just simply uninstalls any applications that were installed after that date that you pick. So, for example, you know, today is September 3rd, and let's say last week, a week ago Monday, I installed Microsoft Office on my computer, and I continued to use it for the week all the way through to today, started having problems and decided I want to do system restore. So anything that I created from last week through today would still exist, and if I picked a restore point 2 weeks ago, the only thing that would be missing would be the applications that I installed, which would be the Microsoft.
I understand now.
Okay. So if it's possible, I would look at your system restore, which you can access by going to the start button and then click on programs and look for accessories and then system tools, and you'll see system restore in there. Select a restore point where you, if it's possible to go back. How long has it started having problems? Has it been within the last month? Or?
No, it's been longer than that. Mm-hmm. We have other computers in the home, so it hasn't really been a huge priority, but there's still information on there that we'd like to get off.
Yeah. Right. So you could try doing the system restore point. The other thing is, like the previous caller, is look and see how to do a Microsoft Windows 7 system repair, which would actually compare some of those files, and maybe for whatever reason, the USB part of the operating system got corrupted, and the repair process would fix that for you.
Yeah. Good luck, Jim. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You may have a computer question or a software question as well, and if you do, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly as we visit with Peter Green. Pete, we had an email from Earl in Medford who has a fairly old HP desktop and with a newer hard drive that apparently about 4 years old, the hard drive. He has a Microsoft Windows XP, and a local computer store told him that after January 2014, it'll no longer be able to use that operating system. Will I still be able to use my senior-type computer after 2014, or should I look for a new one?
Well, basically what Microsoft is saying is that they're sunsetting the product and they're no longer supporting it. So if there are any issues out there that would affect the Windows XP operating system, Microsoft would take ownership of that problem and offer a fix to it all the way through January of next year. If anything comes up, they're not interested in hearing from anybody about any problem, any recall, you know, anything that they got to fix, because they're saying we're done with it. So, as far as continuing to use it, there's no problem at all. You as long as your computer stays in operation, you can use it for the next 20 or 50 years or however long it's going to be around.
Just be backing up your your information on a regular basis. And I'm using Godel, it doesn't run anymore.
That's right. And I think XP has got 3 service packs. So what you may want to do is, if you're really, like Windows XP, is just make sure you have your Windows XP operating system disk, and you might want to download the service packs 1, 2, and 3 you know, just make sure you have those so that if you ever have to redo your system, you've got everything that you need.
And we had an email from Don in De Pere, and kind of goes along with what you were talking about earlier. He says, since more and more of what we mostly use our computers for is now available through a smartphone, is leaving the PC or laptop and just having a freestanding hard drive to store photos and various other information a way to go? Can I send and retrieve information to and from a standing hard drive? There are many of these available and have terabits of storage capability, so space would not be a concern.
That's a really good question, because what it would require, and you'd have to do the research on this, whether whatever operating system you're using on the smartphone, whether it's Droid or the iOS or any operating system, is an application that allows you to talk to an externally attached hard drive. So, for example, I know of an application for the iPhone called iFunbox, which allows you to talk to your PC and your iDevice, whether it's an iPad or an iPhone, as a storage device. Or, you know, you can go and grab whatever picture files or PDFs or ebooks that you have on your system or videos. You can manipulate the files between both machines. So what he's asking is that if I just have a standalone hard drive, can I, you know, cable up to that with my smartphone and simply transfer it? And the way the iPhone works is you've got iTunes and it says, hey, and then it backs it up. So you need an application that would be able to talk to an external device through the port from that smartphone that you're using. Yeah. So it just number one, it would require research to see if it's available. And number two, if it isn't available, why not create the app that makes it available?
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
So that's the million-dollar idea. Now go to work.
Oh, man. That's a good idea, though.
Yeah.
Ron in Sheboygan. Whoop, we lost Ron in Sheboygan. Let's go to Dave in Milwaukee. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Hey.
What can we do for you, Dave?
Well, briefly, I've got a desktop with dual hard drives. My first hard drive has my operating system on and programs. Second one is all my data. The first one has crashed so bad that I can't get it started, and it won't even let me start off my XP boot disk. I've tried something off the web called Ergutu or something like that, and that got into it, but it wouldn't allow me to drag and drop a few docs I want to get off of there before I reformat it. In fact, I couldn't even reformat it. So any suggestions how to get into this thing?
What I would do is I would take the drives out and, you know, whichever drive you need. You said your drive number two is your data drive?
Yeah, and that's okay.
Right. Usually when I'm having problems with hard drives like that, I usually take them out, put them in an external, drive so I can plug them into another computer to be able to look at them and grab what I want. And they, you know, depending upon what hard drive you're using, the interface, there are hard drive kits that are available for all of them out there to allow you to do that.
Okay, gotcha. So use on my laptop, use that functioning computer and access that drive and
exactly
drag and drop it and get rid of it.
Yep.
So, okay. That'll do it. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Ron in La Crosse. Let's turn to you next. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I have a problem. I have two accounts on my older Hewlett-Packard laptop, and for a while I had trouble accessing my administrative account, so I went to my internet services provider's technical support, and they managed to solve the problem. But now I got my administrative account. I have access, but now I don't seem to have access to my limited user account. And I was told by a book, I think it was Windows XP for Dummies, it's best not to use your administrative account when you're on the internet, lest it pick up viruses. So I would prefer to use my limited user account rather than the administrative account. And the tech support person who made me reaccess my administrative account, well, there's some preliminary steps before the Windows XP operating system goes on this Hewlett-Packard. The screen is dark at first. then some bars appear along the bottom of the vertical bars appear along the bottom of the screen, and it says to do troubleshooting, press F8, and it also provides other options, F9 and F10. I just wonder, do I have to go through that rigmarole with the tech support in order to reacquire both accounts? Because there is a page or instructions or an app in Windows XP for accessing user accounts. But right now, the only thing I can access is my administrative account. Should I just call technical support? What would you know about that?
Well, as long as you can access your administrative account in Windows XP, you can go into the control panel and go into user accounts, and you can create as many accounts as you want. And
right
you
now,
can and one. You can give them whatever user rights you want. So you can set it up as a guest or another administrative account so that when you install applications, it's available for that user as well.
I have another question. I also have a Mini Mac or Mac Mini.
Okay.
And I'm using the same account I use for administrative functions when I'm on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
Should I probably start a limited user account for myself, too, when I'm on the net so I can avoid picking up viruses on my administrative account?
I've never followed that rule, personally.
Okay.
Right. You know, when I use my system, I'm the administrator, and I'm not really concerned,
yeah.
I guess, the way some of these other tech people are, and especially on a Mac, I would not be concerned at all. In a Windows environment, you know, if you've got protection on your system, again, I would be fine using an administrative account as well.
Okay. Did you say detection?
Yeah, you know, some kind of virus worm product that would detect something coming in through an email attachment, typically, or something that you might attempt to download where you didn't realize you'd clicked on something that needed to actually be checked out or disinfected, because it was, you know, they're getting sneakier and sneakier all the time, you know, phishing to try and, you know, get the hooks into you to download something. So, you know, having some of the antivirus, anti-worm products out there, you know, is a good thing, especially if you're not, I guess, a comfortable user where you're really scrutinizing, you know, what's coming at you. At least you have some tool that's screening it for you.
Yep. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com, our guest today. And he can, I bet, answer your questions, too, when you call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, a producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller and really happy to have Peter Green of Infostar.com as our guest today to answer your computer questions. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Susan on Facebook would like to know how to wipe her personal information off before she gets rid of her computer.
Well, to me, the simplest way is go through each of your applications and identify where your data files are and delete them, and then make sure you're either, if you're using a Windows system or a Mac, you know, empty your recycle bin or trash. And then I would use the disks that came with your computer and simply do a system reinstall. And to be extra safe, I would just redo it a second time, and it'll clean it right up.
Nothing there.
Especially if you're going to make it usable for somebody, if you want to make it usable for somebody else. If you don't want to make it usable for somebody else, you know, start the system installation, and then when it's like halfway through, just shut the computer off and then start it over again, you know, to save yourself some time. Or if you are going to sell it, you know, do the same thing. But if you're, you know, trashing it or donating it, remove the hard drive and, you know, bust it up or save it with your files on it and just give the computer away. I mean, it's a matter of where it's go, you know, where the next home is.
Ken in New Berlin Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm 91 years old. I have a Dell computer that I got in 07. I'm at best semi-literate on computers. My question of Peter, what does he know about the WOW computer that's advertised in AARP?
It's funny you mention that because it's one of the links. The AARP is one of the links for the top 10 this month.
Ah.
But I do not know of the WOW computer. What can you tell us?
Well, it's supposed to operate like the iPad.
Okay.
You put your finger on the screen,
mm-hmm.
and for seniors like myself,
mm-hmm.
just scratch your finger across, and you can enlarge the print to easy read, easy, etc.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I don't know what capacity it's got or mm-hmm. what storage, etc. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, okay.
But well, you've not heard about it.
No, but if it's it sounds like it's a tablet, and you know those, you can do the same thing on an iPad. You know, in terms of enlarging the screen, basically you take your fingers
yes.
and just spread them, and it enlarges
yeah.
what's
yeah.
what's on the screen.
Yes.
You know, as far as speed and capacity, I'm sure that if they're promoting it, that they're probably going to have some kind of comparison to the iPad if they think it's a really good value.
Uh-huh.
You know, they would probably, you know, want you to see the comparison between, you know, that device.
Yeah, they advertise that it sells for about $9.99, and they would ship, and you have a 30-day period of time, and if you're not satisfied, mail it back, and you got money back.
So how much did you say it was?
$1,000?
$9.99.
So $1,000?
Yes, $1,000, yeah.
Okay, because an iPad is...
High.
Yeah, it seems awfully high.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Yeah, because the stuff that you're asking for is available on the first-generation iPad, or, you know, that feature.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah,
so you can even, you know, get an older, you know, one- or two-generation iPad from an Apple store, you know, as a refurb and save a lot of money,
yeah.
You know... And you'd probably have a blast with it. I can tell you that I have a second generation iPad, and I put music on it, I put pictures on it, I put videos on it, and ebooks, and
yes.
applications, and play Scrabble and Wheel of Fortune, and have a great time when I'm traveling. And it's a 16 gig. Device. It's not even their largest one.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine you doing more than what I've been doing.
No. That's right. Right, I don't. One of my daughters has an iPad,
mm-hmm.
For the original iPad.
Right.
And she does everything with it.
Mm-hmm.
She comes here and she calls her daughter at Redding, California,
mm-hmm.
and we watch her walk around her apartment and talk with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. But the, well, let's see what I had a question. Now I've lost.
Well, what would be the attraction to you for the WOW computer then?
Well,
knowing what we just talked about and the experience
I agree with you. That's
okay.
Right. I think the iPad would do that itself.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is my question. Somebody said, well, we don't have a wireless system in our house,
mm-hmm.
and therefore that the iPad wouldn't work in our house.
Okay. What you need when you get an iPad, there are two choices. One is to use it only with Wi-Fi, so there has to be some kind of wireless internet access for the iPad or smart device to hook up to. The other option is that you would get one that has the Wi-Fi access, but you're actually buying onto a plan that mm-hmm. gives you the internet access to that device, but it costs you each month to have that. Plus, they charge a little bit more for those tablets.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's what you have to look at is if you – and are you staying at in your own house or
– We live in our own house.
Okay.
My wife's lived here all her life.
Okay.
From 1927 on.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But so what you can do is you're accessing the internet route now, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
You should put in an internet. You might even have it, and it's just not turned on or set up correctly. But you should have a Wi-Fi router put into your house so that you can use a tablet and you don't
absolutely.
So you don't need to buy the one that requires a service.
And if you go on the road, or let's say if you go on a vacation in some place, you can always, for a month mm-hmm. at a time, you can rent that so you don't need the Wi-Fi. In other words, you get the other system. You can
right.
rent it for a month or
right.
2 months or however long you
yep.
want it. So there you go. Good luck, Ken. Well, I've great talking with you. And, I mean, I'd really think about that. iPad.
Yeah.
Rather than the Wow.
Yeah.
The Wow doesn't sound like a Wow to me. Thanks, Ken. Rich in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Say, I've got a portable drive that I use as a scheduled backup drive on Windows 7. When I open it as if it were a normal drive and try to look for the file tree structure, it doesn't look the same as normal. When you're using that secondary drive as a backup, should the backup files look the same as you would see on your main computer or not? Basically, how can I know that I'm getting an adequate backup?
It depends on the software. There are some programs that will allow you to do a backup, and when you go to the backup device where it's copying them to, it will show you the tree structure directory just like it would be on your computer. But there are other programs out there that do backups that, I guess the word is encrypt it to the way they want it. So
okay. And this is a Western Digital drive, I think.
Yeah.
So
I'm not familiar with how all the programs work, but there are programs out there that will do the backups and allow you to see the files so you can pick and choose whichever one you want. For example,
how can I find one of those that I can verify without going through a restore on my computer and then
sure.
finding out, no, it wasn't there, and I wiped out everything.
Right. What I would do is I would research two things. One, I would research the software that you're using. For your backup, there might be a setting that you can change in your options. There might be a simple fix there. So I would go online and learn more about the software and what the options are with it. And then number two, you could probably go to two websites. One would be cnet.com or download.com.
Right.
And you could look for a review of backup programs on CNET. And then download would be your access to like free or trial software for the different backup programs out there.
Okay, thank you.
The other thing is these online services that are out there for backups also work the same way. And when you want to go and do a restore for a file from the cloud, from their internet service, you're actually logging into their storage device as a user, and then you have access to a tree structure of where your file's at, and then you can go pick and choose which files you need to copy back onto your system. So there are a number of options out there for you.
Well, of course, those usually cost something.
Actually, they're pretty reasonable. There's a number of services out there. I know you're probably looking at a single-user system, but there are systems out there for small networks where you maybe need to back up 5 or 10 computers, and you're just looking at backing up data files across the network, and it might cost you $50 for the entire year. And there might be some out there that, based on your needs, you might be able to have enough storage that you might not even have to pay for it. I link to a number of them on my if you go to infostar.com, then go to the Virus Info Center page. And then if you look down in probably towards the middle, you'll see backups. There are a number of companies that provide backup services online, and those are the links to them.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be able to find, a couple of them that fit just right and don't cost anything.
Good luck, Rich. Thank you very much for calling. Email from Deb. I have a 13-year-old G4 PowerBook getting slower and slower. Everybody says get a new computer. I have dial-up, but I'm looking at high speed. Any hope for something this old?
You know, I think there are limitations on the operating system upgrade to that. So,
that's the problem.
You know, you've got the operating system dead end, the hard drive or hardware issues. You know, you might be struggling with some hard drive space, and that may be a reason why it's getting slower and slower. And then the other thing is the internet experience. The internet multimedia experience is getting thicker and bigger all the time and requiring, you know, faster and faster access speeds. And if you're still going through dial-through, that, you know, you're basically choking your internet access to try and do things that it's struggling.
Yeah, yeah. So might be time.
Yeah.
Might be time.
It'll be a fun time.
It'll be an eye-opener for you.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
You definitely got your value out of it.
Peter Green, our guest today, a computer consultant with Infostar.com. He'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. Post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, comment. Like the page while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. Back after the news. With so many of us using computers every day at home, at work, or both, we rely on them a lot. And I rely, and maybe you do too, on Peter Green. Pete's an independent computer consultant. He comes by the first Monday of every month to help us with all our computer problems. And Peter, thanks again for spending time with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Always great, Larry. Always.
And at this time of the program, you always have a top 10 list of places that we should go or take a look at.
I'm not going to let you down. Okay. If you go to Infostar.com and you go to the left side, you see top 10 archives. Scroll down to today's date or hit the current top 10 and you'll get the same links. The first one is Drought Mon. This is not a regular website. And I'm just putting it out there, and hopefully someone from this, I'm not going to bother emailing them. But if you go to droughtmonitor.unl.edu, it is the drought monitor by the National Drought Mitigation Center. And it's a partnership with some government entities and the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. And they should actually seriously consider something like droughtmonitor.gov to make it easy to access. But it has a tremendous amount of information as related to the U.S. and, you know, drought status in different areas. Number two is I traveled outside the country, and I came back in through customs and noticed that there was a website that they put up to make your life easier when you come back into the country. And it's called globalentry.gov, and it's a U.S. Customs and Border Protection program that allows expedited clearance for pre-approved low-risk travelers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to look into that next time I travel abroad.
Actually, we talked about that on the show. Rick Sini, faircompare.com, had bought into it, and he said it really makes a big difference.
Wow. Excellent.
You have to go through, you get vetted
mm-hmm.
ahead of time, but then once you're vetted, you kind of go around the long line.
I like it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that next time. All right. Number three is sbnation.com. And if you're a sports lover, this is an online sports media hub. And you will have access to search among 300-plus sports-related weblogs. So, you know, if you're looking at your favorite teams or just checking out fantasy stuff, it's all there. Number four is winhelponline.com, and it's a resource for troubleshooting Windows XP and Vista operating system problems. Number five, if you're a member of the credit union, there's a link for don'ttaxmycreditunion.org. Didn't realize there are 96 million credit union members nationwide, and apparently there's something going on in Congress to increase taxation of them. Number six is called stack.com, S-T-A-C-K. It's a sports training and guide resource, includes articles, videos, and a lot more. Number seven, this is actually pretty cool and kind of stealth-like, but it's called spydialer.com.
Huh.
And if you have missed a call or some other cell phone number calls you and you need to know who it is without calling it, this thing will call directly into the email, so it will identify the number and who it is. It will allow you to hear who it is.
Wow.
So, might be worth checking out. Number eight, I think I've mentioned this before, but it's definitely worthy of being here again. Cancer.gov. It's a National Cancer Institute link at the National Institutes of Health, and particularly paying attention to searching among 12,000 plus clinical trials that are accepting participants, because cancer has many, many variations and forms, and to be well informed about it and how to get help, this is an excellent resource. Number nine, AARP.org, a resource for people over 50, the baby boomer generation. But the funny thing is, my 22-year-old daughter gets more mail than I do, and I'm of age. So I laugh about that one. They need some list management cleanup. And the last one is what's going on in Syria. I found a website called armscontrol.org, and it's the Arms Control Association since 1971, and it's worth checking out to see about how they're trying to do support for effective arms control policies, because it's just sad that stuff like that goes on all the time.
So there you have it. And, of course, just go to Infostar.com and you can click on today's date and you'll get the information if you didn't get it written down.
Or you can go back to all the ones from the previous shows all for all those years.
We had Sam in Sheboygan send us the specs of the WOW computer.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, I want to mention that because we had a 91-year-old a caller who said, you know, the AARP magazines keeps advertising this and wondered about it.
And it's a different system. It's not a tablet system. It's more of like an all-in-one where it's got a 20-inch screen. It's got RAM for running programs. It's got a 500 gig storage capacity for hard drive. It's got a built-in DVD player, a webcam with a microphone, you know, for doing Skype and you know, videos. It's got the USB, but it's got all these ports. It's got a card reader. It's got speakers. It's got a keyboard and a mouse. So it's a full-fledged computer. It has no comparison at all to a desktop, but probably more of some of the...
Or to an iPad either.
Or an iPad, but sorry about that. No comparison at all to an iPad, but more of what's probably made by HP and IBM in terms of like these all-in-one computers.
Yep.
So it's a different class of system.
Nick in Green Bay, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hey, I got a quick question for you guys. And there's a lot of controversy. I asked on the PlayStation Network and no one gave me a decent answer. Is it faster if I hook a network cable up to my PlayStation 3? Or is it just the same as a Wi-Fi connection? Because I've been lagging lately and, you know, I'm a hardcore gamer. And like last night, I was so mad, like, it locked up and a guy shot me in the head and that was the end of it. And
yeah.
I'm hoping to avoid that, like with a network cable.
Well, we won't do that to you, but I will give you a factual answer. It is faster to be hardwired.
Okay.
Your limiting link in the Wi-Fi is the Wi-Fi signal, unless you're really close, is there's
about 10 feet away.
Yeah, it's still always kind of like an amoeba effect. You know, it's kind of like it just ebbs and flows versus the hard wire, you know, is the fastest. Anything that's put through on hardwired network connection is going to go as fast as possible based on the limiting speed of your internet connection. So if you have a gigabit port on your device, but your internet access is only 1 meg,
sure,
you're only going to go as fast as that 1 meg, but it's going to be reliable. And that's the key thing. Reliability is the key thing. And in fact, in business, for accounting systems, they will tell you, they will caution you, and inventory control systems, that they don't recommend Wi-Fi unless you've got some really stringent things in place because of the reliability and the fact that you can get cut off and you're in the middle of a transaction or working with, you know, a record. So hardwire is always the best.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. Rosie in Minocqua hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I am having trouble getting access to Wi-Fi. My sister gave me her Apple laptop. It's a PowerBook G4, but it's all she's used it for years. No problem with Wi-Fi. I live in a rural area in the Northwoods. We're still on dial-up, which I've had success using dial-up with the internal modem. Everything's okay there, but I've taken it into town where there is free Wi-Fi, and it's not finding any network, and I've had friends talk to me on the phone while I'm sitting there going through the steps, and forgive me, I'm a neophyte with Apple products, but I've been walked through the steps with the airport, and everything seems to be fine, but it just keeps saying no network found, you know, it's not seeing or whatever, when they're reliable places for Wi-Fi. So I just wondered if I could get any suggestions from you on...
So you go to settings? Do you go to settings? And
well, in the when you're in Wi-Fi, if you click on the Wi-Fi symbol, and it's usually in your top right side.
Yes, sir.
And then it will ask you to join networks. And you're telling me it doesn't show any networks?
It doesn't say anything. That's the exact problem, is it doesn't see any networks. And I don't know what possible settings I can change to.
Okay.
And she had, like I said, it's been used reliably with Wi-Fi. She travels all over the place, and it's always worked. So I can't imagine. Mm-hmm. I haven't touched anything or messed with anything, and it's just not seeing that, where I know there are networks.
Right.
I wondered if you might
suggest. Have you... Are you able to enter in any of the names to see if it picks them up after you do that?
No, you're saying that you have to get a name and actually type it.
Well, you could, I mean, let's say, for example, if you went to like a Subway and, you know, they had Wi-Fi and they just called their Wi-Fi Subway, you know, you could click and add a name and it would...
Okay, even though it's set, the setting says automatic network search,
right.
It just comes up with nothing. That's
right.
Sort of where I'm at.
Right.
So if I could get a name from somebody and actually type it.
Yeah, if you can get a name and try it, sometimes that works. The other thing is... I know I have a Mac Pro,
yeah.
You know, the 17-inch book,
mm-hmm.
and I've had problems with Wi-Fi access, and I tried hooking up like another antenna to it to try and bring the signal in a little stronger.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is to see if they might be using, for whatever reason, there are two bands that Wi-Fi uses, and typically they should be making both of them available.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I've been to multiple sites, you know, coffee shops and so forth that say free Wi-Fi coming in, and I've asked them, is there some secret code or something? They're like, nope, it should just be getting it automatically. So
yeah.
But can't you go to settings and, you know, under settings, you have to turn Wi-Fi on.
Right. But she said it's on. It's showing.
It's showing on.
Right.
Yep, it's showing on, and that the airport is on, and it does a little spinny search on the screen for about, you know, 3 seconds, and it just says there's no network. But
you know what you may want to try and do? What you may want to try and do is go to one of the Wi-Fi areas and turn your computer on, but then turn that feature off in your network preferences for your settings.
Yes.
And then shut your system down and then turn it back on.
Yes.
Okay.
And then say go in and redo it with, you know, to look for Wi-Fi.
Okay, and forgive me, when you said turn something off, what is it I meant to turn off?
You're going to go into system settings and network preferences and, you know, look for the airport, your Wi-Fi settings.
Okay.
And you're going to tell it to not look for networks.
Turn it off.
Turn it off. And then, so you're basically telling your computer, I don't want to look at Wi-Fi anymore, and then shut it off, turn it back on, and then go in and redo it and see, because maybe it's looking for her old places, and it just needs to be reset or wiped clean.
Okay, that sounds perfect. I was just looking for anything.
Sometimes
else.
That stuff works.
Great.
Yeah, sometimes that stuff works that way.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much for your help.
Yep.
Thanks
Good luck.
A lot. Yeah. I bet that's it. I'll bet that's it.
I've seen stuff like that happening. It gets just kind of weird.
Beverly in Decorah, Iowa. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is a lot like the last caller. It's in regard to a MacBook Pro that we had about 6 months, and everything works perfect on it. I'm just learning a lot since I'm used to something other than a Mac. The problem that has arisen just within the last week is that my Wi-Fi will come on, and within 15 seconds, it'll say looking for networks. It keeps that up continuously for the whole time that I have a computer on. And as you mentioned a little bit earlier, I guess I probably wouldn't have noticed it being a problem except that I was making a transaction and all of a sudden I didn't have a network and I couldn't get back into it again. So I don't know. I haven't changed anything, and why it's decided to do this now, I have no idea. Do you?
So this is in your house, right?
Yes, it is.
The first thing I would do is I would shut off your router, your wireless router that's propagating the Wi-Fi, and then wait probably about 20-30 seconds, and then turn it back on. So you can either unplug it or
turn it off.
Mm-hmm. Wait 20-30 seconds and then turn it back on and see if your Wi-Fi becomes more reliable that way.
We did do that.
Okay.
And it didn't seem to make any difference. Okay. And it's just, the other thing is we have an HP laptop that never has that issue. I mean, it's on all the time. So I don't know.
Okay. So the next thing I would try would be, like we talked about with the previous caller, is to go into your settings and network preferences and then find your Wi-Fi and turn it off and then shut your system down and go back in and turn it back on and see if that changes it.
Okay.
The other thing, if that has no effect in your situation, is to see if there are any firmware or upgrades or changes to the router that you're using, and for whatever reason, maybe all of a sudden it started becoming buggy and there's some kind of upgrade that you could download and apply to your router, because I've seen that fix problems as well.
Okay.
So you already looked at one, so you got two other options to possibly try.
Okay, well, I certainly will try those, and
good luck.
I thank you very much.
Yep, good luck.
Hope to work. Good luck.
Bob in Madison, hello.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I have a Dell Latitude laptop that I plugged in the mouse while I was booting up and ended up with a blue screen of death, page fault, and non-paged area. It's got the 0X, 6-0s, and 5-0. I have gone and, what did I do here? Tried safe mode. There's about three different safe modes. Tried last good. Pretty much went through the options that it threw up at me. And I do have a disk or three disks that are a ghost from about 3 years ago. Do I have any options before going back for ghost?
So are you telling me that you keep getting the blue screen of death every time you turn your system on?
Every time I get on.
Every time you get on. What I would do is, if you have access to another computer, is take that code that you read and, find out what it means, and you might actually find the solution as to what you need to do. Which version of the operating system are you using?
I think we have the upgrade 3 on it.
So is it? Is it?
It's XP.
It's XP. Okay.
Yeah.
So that code might tell you what you actually need to do to fix the system. It might be pointing to what the device is causing the problem, or what file you might have to copy over to get to your system. So you might go into the command prompt mode, and it might tell you to extract the file off of one of the disks. So that's where I would start, is trying to find out what that code actually means, because a lot of them have been posted on the internet as to how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Good luck.
Very good. I thank you.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for calling. We had some good Facebook comments. Facebook suggestion from Thomas, who says, have the lady with the Wi-Fi problems go to the public library. They are extremely knowledgeable and helpful with these conductivity or connectivity problems, and they generally have rock-solid Wi-Fi for their patrons. So that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Another good follow-up on the Wi-Fi issue comes from Christine on Facebook. She said, I had the same problem the other day when I was setting up my new iPhone. I was told to go into settings and then select forget network. So you just go in and select forget network and turn Wi-Fi back on. Worked great for her.
Yep.
So,
and I also do that with my iPhone a lot when I is just, you know, shut it off and reboot it. But in the case of both those scenarios with their Mac laptops, is rebooting didn't fix it, but telling it to forget the network is, like what we talked about, is basically the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And Laura in Milwaukee can't connect her Mac Pro to Apple TV AirPlay because it's too old, from 2010. Tried to use Air Parrot, a mirror program, but the computer won't recognize it. I just want to stream videos on my computer and see it on my TV without hooking up the old-fashioned wired way. And that's a hard one.
Hmm.
Problem is age of materials, of hardware here.
Yeah, you know, it's also using the, you know, if you're trying to stream stuff and you don't have the connectivity with the device because of the age, that's where the upgrades come into play.
Yeah. Yeah. So I unfortunately, I don't know we can help there. How do you open a picture sent by an iPhone to a Dell laptop computer? Her laptop says it can't open a JPEG file, I think is an issue between Apple and Microsoft Outlook.
Hmm.
Sandra says.
And which system is she trying to open it up on?
Sent from her iPhone to a Dell laptop computer. The laptop says it can't open a JPEG file. I think it's an issue between Apple and Microsoft Outlook. But there must be a solution out there for free.
It's probably, if it's on the Dell, it might be the file type that it's associated with. And, you know, there might, it just simply might need to be reassociated with the program. So if you're trying to open up a JPEG on the Dell, you might want to, you know, look at Microsoft Paint or, what is it called? Microsoft Picture Viewer, or, you know, it might, the association might be off and you just have to go in and reset it to the file type and what program to be associated with it.
Pete, always a pleasure. Look forward to your
fast.
Next visit.
Yep.
Peter Green, computer consultant with InfoStar.com. We'll be back first Monday of next month. Yeah, that's right. First Monday of October, he'll be back and with us again. Tomorrow, Scott Craven comes by to talk about fall hunting seasons and the proposal to allow wild animals as pets, and, of course, a whole lot more. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and thanks a lot for listening.